Welcome to Foxhole Symphony, a podcast about the transformational value of men in authentic community.
In our Foxhole, men are equipped to build relationships that foster belonging, accountability, and growth.
Stop believing the lie that you can thrive in isolation and instead,
join us on the journey from broken to whole.
Welcome to Foxhole Symphony, episode 8. Hey, Sarge, what's happening?
Oh, man, everything's happening.
I know. Well, I was out yesterday in a t-shirt and a Henley doing yard work.
Yeah.
Right? It was 56 degrees and blustery.
Yeah.
And it's a Winnie the Pooh day. And I had a great time. I was out like all afternoon. Yeah. And then I got up this morning to walk the dog and there was 2 inches of snow on the ground.
Well, what a difference a day makes. So my wife and I were at a wedding for a dear friend, and I had the honor of officiating the wedding.
Awesome.
And it's, you know, February, mid-February wedding, you never know what you're going to get. And it was 55 degrees. We're in Jersey City, no jackets, you know, even at night, going back to the hotel, mild, woke up this morning, the snow.
Right.
And what, wow, the difference a day makes, sure. Right? So a couple of praying moms of the groom and the bride.
I get it. City of my birth, by the way. You're hanging in my hood.
Oh, that's right.
First 6 years of this man's life.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a different Jersey City.
Yeah.
Very, very. I was in the Heights.
Right.
Off of Communipaw Avenue.
Yep.
We lived on Webster Avenue, but that's back in the day. We're really glad to be here. Happy to be talking to folks out there who are listening. Hope you guys have been loving what we've been dropping. The Road to Authenticity is out. Our conversation with our good friend Brian. Sarge and I have been talking about a couple different topics that were near and dear to our heart to start here. And we're going to really just let our hearts do the talking today, right?
Yeah, totally ad lib. No outlines, very few notes.
Right.
Just want to dig into dads and sons.
Yeah, and this really is an invitation for all of you. What you're getting and continue to get from us 8 episodes in is the story of our lives. What Steve and I are talking about in our conversations during the day when the world is spinning, we've got a list as long as our arms of things to do. We've got 34 things at home, 2 at work, a couple at church, and ministry and podcasts and so on and so forth that we're working on. But we make time to say, what's going on? What's real? What's happening in your life? This is what we've grown to in our conversations, but that's what this conversation is going to be.
Yeah.
Just something we were talking about recently about most likely our kids.
Right.
But we'll expand that to talk about our dads. I'd love to tell you some stories about my grandfather, Poppy.
Yeah.
You know, and then stories, of course, about our relationship with Big Daddy.
Yeah.
You know, with Abba Father.
Yeah.
So I think we'll have some fun with this.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So where do you want to start?
I can't think of any better place to start a conversation about fathers than to tell you a heartwarming story about my grandfather.
Okay.
Just going to wing this. Poppy would come over the house on Saturdays and Sunday mornings at about 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And in his hands, he'd have white boxes from the local bakery. And Poppy would show up, and you know that perfect, the way you tie a bakery box in the old days? That string?
Sure.
Red and
bakery
white
string. Yeah.
Bakery string. So he'd have big boxes that he'd have in his hands, but he'd come over, everyone's asleep. He'd go into the landscaping. We had those little red stones and he'd get a handful and he'd stand there and he'd throw them up at the window. Me and my brother's room on the second floor. He's dropping rocks on the window to wake us up. Like, they're right. No joke. You kind of look behind the blind and there's Poppy smiling, waving with hands full of boxes. And he wants to get us up before everybody else. We'd go downstairs. Now I'm 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, whatever. My brother's 5 years younger than me. I'm like, come on. He's got the bakery
boxes.
Right.
Sure.
Open the door. There he is. And he'd come in and all of a sudden people, you know, my mom and dad would come downstairs. Next thing you know, neighbors, friends are coming in. My house was full of people and Poppy fed them. And that was part of his love language is, And you got to know, in those days, he would bring the box. Now, you had some Boston creams. You had some jelly sticks, jelly donuts, powdered jelly donuts. But the thing in there that everybody went after was what we today, I think, might call a coffee bun. What he called a cruller. What's a cruller? Right. I don't know, but it's a cruller. And I'm like, as a kid, I'm like, yeah, what'd you have for breakfast? Crullers.
Right.
But it was the crullers.
Some kind of donut dough with frosting.
Right. But in those days, The way we judge a cruller in our family is how much of it's the little like bread part, the cake part at the bottom.
Right.
And how many inches of that cinnamon sugar stuff icing right. on top. Well, in these days, it was like a half inch of cake and 2.5 inches of sugar. So can you imagine what we were like, you know, like bouncing right. off the walls like ferrets.
Yeah, crashing by 11 a.m.
Right, right. Nap time. But Poppy came with a box of crullers and changed our lives. This, I tell you the story to say this is how he showed us. One of the ways that he showed us that he loved us is that he fed us. Even though he was broken and had struggled in many ways, several marriages, other things going on in his life. But for his grandkids, there was no. It was no was not in his vocabulary. He came and he delivered. He took you with him. He drove you where you wanted to go, gas money for your first car, bought your first car.
Wow.
That was Poppy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know. What a great memory. And I could tell you, I haven't told that story in 20 years.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
I, you know, I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm thinking back and I never knew my paternal grandparents and I never met them. My maternal grandparents, you know, we kind of moved, you know, my parents had moved out of the city, out into the country. And so we just didn't have that. There wasn't that neighborhood, sure. you know, I don't know.
Connection
yeah. and proximity even.
Right. right?
So, you know, it was more holidays. It just was the holidays. I mean, I didn't have that connection with, you know, my grandfather at all. So it's neat to hear that story.
Yeah. Imagine getting, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get woken up. When we had the air conditioner on, this is a small room with bunk beds. I was on the top. Danny was on the bottom.
You had an air conditioner?
We did. And we had a little Sears air conditioner, like 2 BTUs.
Wow.
But it made yeah. the room freezing. But he was really challenged because the little pebbles didn't wake us up. He had to get bigger rocks.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He
yeah.
never broke a window. I don't know how he did it. In any case. but besides the fact that it's a heartwarming story, I hope, for anybody listening, Poppy was an interesting dichotomy. This is blue collar. Poppy was an A-card union guy, construction guy, finished carpenter, built everything in our house in Roselle. I mean, he may have in Jersey City. I was just too young and not paying attention. I moved out of Jersey City when I was 6.
Okay.
So he was a builder. Mm. If my mom said, I wanna, he just started writing. He always had a pencil in his ear, like a carpenter yep. needed to, yep. those flat pencils.
Yeah, yeah,
carpenter's
sure.
pencil, right? Poppy had, as I learned, as I got older and watched him, you know, as he aged and watch him die, just understanding not only what his love language was, but what his life was like. My grandma, Nanny Vesper, lived with us. Hmm. So for a while, both my grandmothers lived in our house until they died.
Okay.
So I guess that was the tradition.
Yeah.
The coming out of Jersey City. My dad was some Italian. We had a bunch of Irish German in us, but I thought everybody's grandmothers lived with them. But learning my Poppy story and it was a tough marriage. It was rough in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the old days, you might have thought he had things to make up for.
Right.
But he certainly felt that he did.
Okay.
And the way that came out, because he didn't know what else to do, is he stayed around. Mm-hmm. So he didn't duck it, right? He said, mm-hmm. you know, I made a mess and here's how I'm going to clean it up. I'm mm-hmm. going to stay by you and I'm going to be there for you. Every day, any day that you needed something. So I learned an awful lot about that. When it came to forming me as a man, I can tell you that my grandfather taught me more lessons I remember today than my dad. And my dad taught me a lot. I'm not talking negatively about my dad at all. There was a lot of love going around there. And he modeled the version I was taught of manliness, manhood, fatherhood. Mm-hmm. He modeled that for me first.
Okay.
Who did that for you?
My dad did that. And I think there's, you know, a number of ways that he did it. But, you know, my dad is and was just a faithful, loyal, you know, dependable, consistent. You know, these are the words that come to mind.
Boy Scout.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The scout oath, right? Like trustworthy, loyal, kind. You know, that was my dad.
Yeah.
And is. But, you know, he modeled that since I was a young boy. He modeled it at home with, you know, with my mom. He showed me what it looks like to serve in the home and to serve his wife and to love her well. You know, he just, even his job, his career. I mean, you know, he worked at AT&T for, you know, 147 years, you know, and just faithfully went to that office cube
pension
day after day after day after day. And I remember thinking, man, like, that's brutal.
Right. Like, right? My mom.
But that's what he did.
Yep.
That's what he did. And, you know, earned a living and provided and was happy to do it. And so, you know, those are things that just, you know, that resonate with me. And then what comes to mind is this. I can remember being in our station wagon, driving through town, and he would not pass a hitchhiker without picking them up. And my brother and I are in the back seat. Mom's in the front seat with Dad. And it's like, okay, scoot over. Here we go again. Hi.
Right. Did you get the middle? Were you in middle?
Oh, totally. Of course I was. My brother's 4 years older. He was like, you know, I'm in the middle.
You got the hump.
Of course.
Oh.
And so, you know, and here's this person. You know, where are we headed?
That's why you're so good with people today.
Well, you know, strangers. I mean, it's true.
Well, like, you're fearless. You are.
And you know, like, so anyway, yes. I mean, that was my dad. Like, and some of them, it was a consistent, like, it was the same people. Over and over again, be like, you know, and you'd start to develop relationships with these people, and they're just taking them from here to there, and they just happen to be walking along, you know, Route 31. And I mean, there, you know, there was one woman actually that comes to mind. If you grew up in the Hunterdon County area or in the Flemington area, you know, back in the early 80s, you might even know who this woman was, but they used to call her the Cat Lady, and she pushed a shopping cart, and she had like a dozen cats, and they would follow her. She would have them in the cart. She'd usually have a bag of her possessions in the shopping cart. Elderly.
Oh, elderly woman. Maria, I bet you Maria's family knows.
Probably has to. And so she'd be, you know, walking up 31, going from wherever to who knows where. Right. And my dad would not pass her by. I mean, we would stop consistently and pick her up and bring her wherever.
What'd you do with her? A wagon.
Yeah, I you know, I don't even remember. That's
did you have a country squire? Did you have a station wagon?
We did. We had a big station wagon. Probably threw it in the back.
We were country squire people.
Anyway,
my dad could back a country squire into the tiniest little garage. I'll never forget. I'm telling you, bro. I haven't thought about this in a while, but that's all he bought was country squires. I don't know if we ever had a different car.
It's funny. I mean, I father son relationships are, I mean, obviously unique, but they're, you know, they're tricky. They're tricky relationships.
Sure.
And, you know, for a long time, right? Like a lot of sons, not every, but sons idolize their dad. You know, they think they're invincible. They think they're superheroes, right?
Sure.
Especially when you're
on the pedestal.
When you're young. Yeah. You put them on a pedestal. And, and then, you know, there's this point at which a son, you know, realizes that his father's human. Right, he's just a guy, mortal and flawed.
Right,
and at that point, you know, the son, we as boys, we start to begin to assert our own identity.
Sure,
and
some hormones start working.
Right, and so the hormone, right, and we're trying to figure it out. We're not just testing boundaries. I mean, we're doing that at 2 and 3 years old, but later on, you know, teenage years, you know, we start to challenge our father's authority,
sure,
knowledge,
yeah,
right. We, you know, I'm sure, yeah, I was
he
a
wasn't
know-it-all
right all the time.
Yeah, you get to a point where you're like, okay, you actually know nothing. I know this because my son now thinks I know nothing, right? So now it's occurring to me. I'm pretty sure I did that to my dad too when I was in my mid-teens.
Absolutely, and look, some of that challenge comes from synapses firing that weren't the day before when you realize, as you said, the flaws of your dad. I mean, I'll tell you, both my grandfather and dad were both divorced. Mm-hmm. At my grandfather several times based on the records that I know, but there were some fractures in their lives, you know, mm-hmm. with the relationships and things like that. But in terms of what they did as a dad, I think they earned that pedestal in a way. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as a negative thing, in terms of how I looked at them, mm-hmm. but I can recall the eye-opening moments of, you know, he sweats just like I do.
Sure.
Craps like I do. You know, breathes like that. And then, of course, you go over the line of, I'm just like you.
Right.
No.
Right. Right.
Do you learn that was wrong? No matter when you say that, it's too soon.
Yep.
Because you realize in relationship to my children today, I have gone totally through, and I'll let everybody know who's listening. Sarge and I are coming at this from very different timelines and generations. I have sons from 23 to 36 years old.
Yep.
You have a 17-year-old son.
Yep.
Right. So we have different perspectives on this, but there's that, I was happy being like that guy on the pedestal for a while.
Yeah.
Then I became the flawed dad. Then you become taxi driver and ATM, and then you only become ATM. And right there, there's
the- well, it's interesting. You know, you asked the question, who showed you what it looked like to be a man, right? And you know, as I think about that, I mean, yes, we do as dads have a responsibility to model that for our kids,
right?
As well as for our daughters. Right. As well as for our daughters. I mean, we're happy to be talking about fathers and sons, but it's important to show our daughters what a man is as well. But the thing is that it occurs to me that, you know, I with my own son, I had this responsibility. I probably almost took it too seriously. Like, it's up to me. I need to show him, not just show him, but make him a man.
Right.
And I don't know that that's the best perspective. Like, I think there's something about it, the man is there. You know, what I see now when I look at my son, at 17, is that, you know, I underestimated the man that he was at 14, at 15, at 16.
Definitely those years.
Yeah.
High school?
So I'm looking at him saying, wow, like, we've so far to go. But in reality, the man was there. It's just pulling that man out of him,
right?
Rather than making him the man, just pulling the man out of him and helping that man begin to thrive and flourish and form and shape.
Agreed. Totally. I mean, think about the time frame you're talking about. You're going to high school trying to figure out where you fit in the world, which clique am I going to be in?
Yeah.
And then come home to a type A or type whatever person making rules in your house. And you're like, wait a minute, I got testosterone now.
Right.
But the dynamics of the school day for 6 hours and then coming home and dealing with the dynamics of dad, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I wish I knew, right? In so many ways. My dad and I spent a ton of time together when I was growing up. My dad was there. One of the great things about my dad was that he took fathering very seriously. Mm-hmm. And showed me a lot of things. To this day, I lament this with my brother probably too often. My dad taught me to play every sport. I could take you on in badminton right now. I was good, average in all of them. Mm-hmm. Lawn darts,
right?
You know, pitch and putt. It didn't matter. Mini golf, clown's mouth. I was, right? Just all, but not. We never focused on one thing. Mm. He wanted me to be adept and be able to be an everyman. Just be in any environment. He taught me so many things about a dad who sticks with you. Mm-hmm. He was my coach in three sports growing up, from 6 years old to 13. Long time.
Yep.
Baseball, football, basketball. And he dropped basketball, but football and baseball, he was there every day. Like, I went to school, came back, got my dad's car, off to practice we went, or off to a game we went. He also taught me the value. Here's a good one. Good memory just popped into my head. My dad taught me the value of a good hug. Mm. And Vespers are huggers.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
To this day, it's one of these things this stupid freaking virus makes me nuts about. Nobody hugs anymore.
Right.
Right? Because we don't want to get sick.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, he was a hugger. And in public, my dad would embrace me and kiss me on the cheek. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget his whole life. I just didn't think about it when I was younger. But then when I was a teenager, like, he's hugging me again.
Of course.
Right. Yeah. But that really stuck with me and is something I have. I'm thinking of things that I've carried forward about what showing that kind of affection and love can mean in a father and son's relationship. Yeah. And he did it to his dad. My dad did it to Poppy.
Yeah.
He used to make Poppy squirm.
Yeah.
He hated it. But then Poppy saw that we did it with him. So whenever we greeted each other, it was always a hug and a kiss or just a hug.
Yeah.
And that became just a family emblem, a tradition that we've carried forward.
That's cool.
And my boys do it, you know, with us today.
Yeah. 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 I'm a huge hugger. I hug everybody, hug strangers, you know, and my dad, was
the cat
affectionate,
lady.
Yeah. The cat lady. Yeah. Come on. Squeeze in. Come on, kitties. But you know, we did, my dad and I too spent a lot of time. My dad invested so much time. When I think about it, you know, over the years, as you know, I was a scout, Eagle Scout, you know, basically my entire childhood. I mean, from, you know, kindergarten, you know, first grade,
right
up through high school. And man, let me tell you, I mean, the servanthood, the volunteerism, the time, you know, that he put in as a leader, you know, an adult leader in the troop, and with me, and just going away weekends, sleeping on the ground. I mean, I can so much more appreciate that now because I don't want to sleep on the ground
ever.
I'm so thankful that my son is not involved in it because I don't want to do it. But never. I mean, as much as I love camping, so here's so this is funny.
No, you're like glamping.
Well, it's true, but I do love camping. I mean, I do. I would love to be outdoors more. It's kind of funny. My wife's the opposite. So my wife has no interest, never did, in camping. I mean, talk about true glamping. And we did it. We did the Klondikes in the winter, right? I'm looking out at the snow on the ground. Like we camped in this.
Sure.
You know, right? Threw it right down. And
best fire you ever had.
Oh man. I mean, we were out and camped a ton and my dad was there. And I would invite, you know, my kids, my family to go camping. I'd buy all the stuff. We're going to do it. No. No interest ever. We've never done it once, right? So I have a brand new 8-person tent if anybody wants to use it. It's still in the package. Been there for, it's 10 years old, but it's brand new.
Right.
Oh man, that's funny.
Good memories. Holy cow. Really. Lot of lessons. The thread that connects Poppy, my grandfather, through my dad to me and then to my boys is pretty interesting now that, you know, I've evolved, matured, gotten older, and understand how some of those things fit together. And, you know, you and I have talked about our greatest fears before, right? Part of Mark Men protocol. And I think about one of my greatest fears is that I'd wind up like my father or grandfather in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And Sarge, another one of my greatest fears is that I wouldn't wind up like them in some ways. Hmm. Like there are some essential things I know that they taught me that I'm so glad I showed my boys.
Yeah.
And that in my head, that brings me just to the theme of how much have I told my boys versus showed them? Hmm. And I think I've been a better shower. Hmm. I hope I have. I hope I've lived. You know, you sent me that note with a couple of the principles about things that boys need from their dad. It was so eye-opening and really good for me. And I thought, yeah, like check.
Yeah.
You know me, checking boxes is a fave. But nonetheless, I'm thinking about, you know, did I show them, you know, what it was like to love their mom? Mm-hmm. And it's a real, it hurts me, you know, to think about my two older boys and having been separated and divorced from their mom when they were 7 and 8. You know, and not being there to show them what it was like, you know, but certainly with my younger boys and loving Rhea so much and showing them every day what that's like right to today.
Yeah.
And as long as they see me and know me, that's a lesson that they'll never forget.
Yeah.
Or at least I hope so.
Yeah. And how awesome that God gave you that opportunity to redeem, you know, what was a loss maybe. And, to have the opportunity to do that. I mean, there's a lot that, you know, sons need from their dads. And, you know, one of them, as you mentioned, was to see you love their mother.
Right.
Right. There's another one and it's, I mentioned it a little bit earlier as far as like challenging authority and knowledge. And that is, it's so important, I think, for sons to see you fail or at least know that you have. And, you know, I experienced this recently because of my story. And, you know, I had not really shared my full story with my kids right up until this year. In fact, I prayed for years that God would help me know when is the right time to share my story.
Sure.
And my story, you know, it involves things like addiction and you know, conviction of a crime and jail time. And these are things that, you know, I personally, got healing from and moved beyond. I mean, this is decades ago, but, so much fear associated with sharing that with my kids, that they would see me differently, right? That they would maybe have, you know, some shame in my past mistakes. Sure. And what's really cool is, leading up to this podcast, you know, God really prompted me that now's the time. Hey, if you're going to be authentic on this podcast, right, and there's a time where I will share, you know, more detail around my story in the hopes that it will impact someone. I said, wow, yeah, if I'm going to do that, I better have these conversations. Right. And I got to share, you know, the details with both my daughter as well as my son, you know, recently in the last few months, and both just, first of all, my daughter was not the least bit surprised. So, which, you know, God love her. She's like, yeah, that's no surprise, Dad. You know, like, you know, and my God, how did mom stay with you? You know, I got to talk to mom. She was more interested in talking to mom to figure out why she stayed with me.
Perfect, right? College daughter question.
I love her dearly. Mm-hmm. My son, shocked, you know, shock and awe. But, you know, his response was, that's so dank, Dad. Just, wow, there's so much more to you, I think was what he meant. And sure. I have to tell you, our connection has deepened. You know, there's a deeper authenticity. There's a deeper level of transparency. And I think it was important for him to know how badly I failed.
Right.
And to see God's grace in my story. And you know, even, you know, my hope is that it even draws him closer to God.
Beautiful.
Knowing my story.
Yeah.
But it's important that they see us fail.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I don't have a similar story. You have your life and background as I have mine, but certainly I've been accused in my house of trying to be perfect, trying to get things right, get things done in order.
Shocking. That accusation makes complete sense.
Right. And then the chances to fail are pretty high. You're going to drop the ball at that point, exactly. You know,
it's or just be perfect. Try harder.
Right. Right. Which we know works every time.
Oh yeah. Totally.
If I just work a little harder, a little longer. Right. What was that? That came out in like the '70s. It was like, work smarter, not harder. I was so happy about that. Like, good. I'm not that smart. No one will care about me then. No, but there's without question, one of the building blocks, one of the puzzle pieces we pass on to our kids is how you failed, but what did you do? How did you react to that? Did that throw you off? Did you go into a cave? You know, did you just crumble? Mm-hmm. Or did you pull yourself together? Find for us,
yep.
For me, a failure means I call you, I call Mo, I call Bo, I call one of my guys in my foxhole. And I say, hey, I'm struggling here. You know, do I need to do work on this? Or is this something to let, you know, put at the foot of the cross for an hour?
Yeah.
What do I do with this? So that's probably another episode, but it's multifaceted.
It's very multifaceted, because the other thing that results from that is, you know, if I share my failures with my son, I better be prepared to show him grace when he fails.
How about
So when you talk about perfection, right? Like I feel like sometimes we as dads, we're like, well, we can't show our failures because it's going to give them license to do something, right?
Well, blank.
That's one side of the coin, but the other side of the coin is, no, we then get to show them the grace that God wants us to show them, and to model that. To model God's grace, right, in their life. And so the fact that we show them that we've failed gives us the ability to then show grace when they fail.
What a great reminder.
And here's the other thing. You know, I think I've said this before, but, you know, I remember some of the most powerful things I've done, I believe, as a dad, powerful meaning most impactful with my kids, is apologize to them, you know, over the years, right? Like, you know, whether it's, you know, lashing out, you know, or, you know, raising my voice more than I should have, or whatever it was, doing something that was just stupid, that I wish I didn't do or say, and going back to them and saying, taking responsibility for it. Like, what better opportunity do we have to model than to show them how to take responsibility for our actions when we screw up? It's deeply powerful.
Agreed. I think you've said that in a previous episode as well. That's essential, essential. And I'll tell you that doing that with adult children, is even that much more impactful because the tenor of the conversation is different. The maturity of the conversation is different. Mm-hmm. Both are a little smarter, but doing with a teenager sets the stage for future conversations. I want you to know, planting those seeds when you did and are huge.
Yeah. Or even preteen. I mean, I remember doing that, 10, 11, 12 years old. I mean, those are key years. If you're a dad of a young, younger child, look for those opportunities because they're significant and they will help to shape your kids into who they're going to be.
So Sarge, that reminds me of an apology I had to make to my oldest son, Jeremy. We have a very fractured relationship right now. Matter of fact, I haven't talked to him in 8-9 months. Mm. Without going into the entire story, I can tell you that I hurt and embarrassed him when he was a young boy very badly. Mm. And I have apologized for it. I've put it at the foot of the cross. I've owned it. I've tried to make restoration, through that. Mm. Came to learn, and he hasn't forgiven me. Mm. I can tell you. He's told me he hasn't forgiven me. Actually, he hasn't forgiven our entire family for that. Mm. Right? And it's a very complex issue. The point is that I had a chance to apologize and own it and did what I could do.
Yeah.
And the rest is up to him now.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, that's one of the things you'll learn, even though that happened when he was 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's now a quarter century later, and its ripples are being felt today. Mm. And I pray about that all the time.
Well, that's a great point, right? Because there's no guarantees. I mean, just because we apologize, right? I mean, but yes, you did your part. We don't know how the other person, whether it's a parent, or a child of ours, how they're going to respond to that. I mean, even, sharing my stories with my kids, I mean, it was a risk.
Sure.
They could have, reacted very differently. I mean, thank God, their hearts were full of grace and love and said, well, you're dad. I mean, that's who they know. But to your point, those are risks. And, we just do our part. And in your case, the two adjoining hotel rooms with two doors, right? Leaving yours open and just, occasionally knocking and requesting that they open theirs. And they, they may or may not.
Right. I'm learning that one the hard way. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that.
So there's a lot of lessons. Let's try and focus. For me, I want to focus a little bit. Warm stories of love. I can tell you that I was raised in a loving family. Mm. I was taught to love by both the men and the women in my family. My mom and sister, our family was very close, as I guess many families are. And I'm learning today, the world's just a messier, different place. The way you described what your dad did and how you were raised, one generation changed so much.
Yes.
So I want to say to dads listening, don't hesitate to take these steps, take risky steps, take steps that you're thinking, I'm not really sure what to do with this. Find the guys in your foxhole or go dig a damn foxhole and get some guys in it that you can bounce these questions off while your kids are listening to you, talking to you, living with you preferably.
Yeah.
But it's never too late to have that conversation. My second son, doesn't live with me and hasn't for a very long time and needs a jump start in his life in the worst way. He knows it. I know it. But we talk. We're not as close as I'd like to be, that I want to be with him. But I'm praying for him and want him to know that when he needs me, I will always be there. That the love he saw as a young boy, now he's 34.
Yeah.
33, 34. It's maybe 35. This is, some people might say, oh man, he's a man. He's out there. He's doing his thing. And I say bullshit. I say it's time. There's always time to lean in and pour into your kids the things that you think you were taught that are worth passing on. And part of that is got to be the story of our Savior. It has to be. If we are who we say we are, and from the beginning that we've come on the air and that we live every day, that there's a Father who loves you, right? That sent his Son to die for us. Right, so that we can do this life. This is our time to pass that love on. And the way we do it first, hopefully, is with our family. God the Father, then with our family, and then whatever else you've got behind that, that is your priorities. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%, man. That's well said. That is well said. And you know, I think, you know, it's one other point that I wanted to make was, I think this can easily be overlooked. And I forget where I read it, but I read it a number of years ago. And I was like, wow, I don't, like, that's profound. I don't know that my son really knows that. And it's this. It's important that a son knows that their dad likes them. Just likes them. It's one thing to tell them you love them, you're my son, but to like them as a person, right? And that's a little different. It's a little nuanced. And, you know, and I do, you know, I do. I like, you know, I like my kids. I just like who they are. I like being with them. I like spending time and engaging in their interests. But it's really important. And I think, you know, again, it's just nuanced.
It is. I'm going to piggyback on that because as soon as you said that, I thought, first of all, yes, couldn't agree more. Because like sounds a lot different than love, but I'll also tell you that, for instance, even though I have four boys, you have a son and a daughter, I know that you love your kids the same, right? You don't love one more than the other,
right?
But you absolutely love them differently.
Yeah,
I believe that. I know I love my sons differently.
Yeah,
the same level of love, if there's such a love meter, but I also learned, I would say, recently, in the last 5 years, that their mom and I love them differently as well. Mm-hmm. We're not called to love them the same.
Right.
There's a different kind of mother's love. Sometimes it makes me nuts, you know, but I think I get it.
Yep.
And I know my boys are so much better for having the combination of their mom's love and mine.
Yeah.
And how much that matters. How important is that in a child's life, especially early in their lives?
Yeah.
You know, with so many marriages dissolving, so many fractured marriages and relationships. And I've said to people that you and I both know is that no matter what happens between you and your spouse, if that's irreconcilable, those kids need both of you.
Yeah.
They need mom and dad's voice in their lives. So that's as far as I'll get on the psychology couch. But I think that's really important and equally nuanced as what you were talking about.
Yeah. You know, one thing we didn't talk about was discipline. You know, that's a whole nother.
Where's the Louisville Slugger?
I mean, that's a huge topic and maybe just like a minute, but, I mean, you know, if we're going to father the way that God, the Father, right, fathers us, if that's our model,
right.
You know, God disciplines those he loves, right? We, you know, we as sons needed boundaries. You know, we part of becoming a man, part of the man coming out of us, part of going from childhood into adulthood was figuring out where those boundaries were and testing, you know, I don't tested every single one of them, right? Show me more boundaries I can test.
Can I make some up?
It's important. It's part of life. It's part of childhood. Right. But how we help our sons, figure out where those boundaries are, is pretty critical. It's pretty critical and will shape and form who they are, who they become, how they father as well.
Absolutely. Wow. That's half an episode.
Quickly, not to put you on the spot, but how were you disciplined in a sentence or two?
I didn't grow up in a house with anger in it. I kid my family that I'm surprised I don't look like Dumbo because my dad was an ear puller occasionally, like, come here, you know. but at the same time, really never anger showed to me. One time I can tell you very quickly, I was sitting at the dinner table. I smart mouthed my grandmother, Nanny Vesper, my dad's mother. And in one movement, my dad, I was on his left. He grabbed me by the scruff of my neck with his left hand, lifted me out of my chair and pinned me on the wall. I was 13.
Wow.
I wasn't a little kid. I was like artwork. All of a sudden, my feet flailing in the air. Yeah. That's the only time I can really recall my dad showing me his his prowess. Like apologize to your grandmother. Yeah. It's like someone knocked the air out of me. I couldn't even, couldn't even breathe. In any case, discipline in our house, I was pre-timeouts.
Right? Okay. Yeah,
You could get grounded.
Sure.
I was shamed. I could tell you because I felt awful. Like with my mom, especially, you know, in terms of discipline. But I think that I had what my kids don't have. I had a healthy fear of my dad.
Yeah.
And he never hit me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No belts, a little ear pulling the one time on the wall, grab me by my belt and like toss me in the car, like get in, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I was, I call it a healthy fear. Maybe a psychologist would not call it healthy, but I would never talk back to my dad.
No, yeah, it's funny. Ever. It's funny. I share that. I had the same with my dad, a healthy fear. There was a respect and a almost a reverence. And I don't know why. I don't know where that came from. It wasn't, I wasn't beat. I wasn't, there was an occasional, when I deserved it. There was one time I remember throwing a tantrum and ripping the shower curtain down and, making a ruckus. I got shoved around a little bit. Right. And that was enough for me. And on the flip side, going back to grace, the most impactful experience of my life as a son was I was playing with a piece of lumber in the garage. I was probably, 7.
Okay.
Right? It was like a piece of molding. And I don't know, I'm swinging it around, a long piece of wood, 12 feet. This is fun. And it snapped. And I remember the fear that I had was, I could feel it right now. Absolutely tangible. And I was like, I have to tell him. And I went inside.
Broke the wood.
And I told my dad, and I was hysterical. And he picked me up, put me on his lap, and almost with like a warm laugh, just said, "Son, it's okay. It's just totally okay. This is no big deal." And that in my mind, it blew my mind that's how he would respond to me. I don't know why, but it was so impactful to me.
That's beautiful, beautiful. Quick, two things pop into my head now that we're 3 hours into this. I'm thinking of discipline. Part of the discipline that we learned the healthy fear is how I watched my dad treat his dad. I know that's one of the ways I learned it.
Okay.
My dad was reverent to his father.
Oh, interesting.
As messy as my father's parents' relationship was, and that his mom lived with us, and mom expected for my dad to back her.
Sure.
That's one. The other was my mom. Sweet little Irish gal, love her to death. And she was one of the moms, though. I'll be talking to your father when he comes home.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That one.
Yeah.
I smoked 2 times in my young life.
Yeah.
Both times lasted about 10 minutes. But one of those times, I happened to be walking down the street in Roselle, New Jersey, and my mother walked up.
Yeah.
Caught me by surprise. And all she did was look at me and say, "Go ahead. What do you think?" she said.
"I'll be talking to your father about this."
That's it.
Yeah. You know what's funny?
I went home and hid in the closet. I swear, in the fetal position in the closet in my room. I haven't thought about this in 55 years.
Now that you mention that, though, that is true in my home as well. Because my mother, like your mom, tiny, tiny woman, right? I mean, my mom's, I don't know. I think she's 4'11". Maybe that may be pushing it. That may be just for the program. She might be 4'9" or 10". And, not that I'm a big guy, but my brother was, and he and I mean, we would fight, two brothers, right? So I remember we were home from school on a snowy day, middle of winter, school's canceled. We're home all day with my mother. Now, my mother was a preschool teacher, so she'd normally be out too, but schools were closed. So we're in the house all day. She's on the phone, and we're like, poof, 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 poof. poof, just, you know, whatever, wrestling, beating
this
the snot out of each other.
Lightsabers.
Yeah, yeah, fighting over, you know, which of the four television stations we were going to watch, because it's all you got.
PIX.
Right? Yeah, right. Exactly.
W-O-R.
Yeah, yeah. And ABC. And her only defense was bananas. Literal bananas.
What?
She would throw bananas at us. So she's on the phone and there was a bunch of bananas and she would throw bananas at us. And we would just laugh because they were soft.
Mom's got bananas.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And we were, you know, and then we'd laugh and she, your father's going to hear about this. Right? Exactly. And all of a sudden.
Pucker factor was
but, you
high.
Know, it that experience, she ended up locking us out of the house. Now it was the middle of winter and it was snowing, right? She's going to listen to this. She's going to love this. Oh my gosh. So no, but it drew my brother and I close together because my brother had one of those, onesie snowsuits.
Oh, he climbed in.
So my brother had one in the garage. Thank God, you know, I'm like probably in my underwear and he gets his snowsuit and was looking at me like kind of, well, what are you going to do? Right. And I was like, there's nothing for me. I'll freeze to death. And it felt like 6 hours, but it was probably 7 minutes until my father got home from work. It was probably like, you know, 5:24 and my dad was going to be home at 5:30. But my brother gave me one of the legs. He's like, here, go in here. And so I'm in one of the legs and he's in the other one. And they're like, you know, like, so we went from beating the snot out of each other to like hugging in this one snowsuit, shivering, waiting for my dad to come. And I remember him, he pulls in. He's like,
looks at your mom.
He just looks at us. He's like, what did you guys do? What did you do? Stay out here while I go assess the damage, you know?
And how about this? I think it was even more damaging that my mom would say, your dad's going to hear about this, but then not tell him. It was mind games. It was like being in Auschwitz. Yeah, you know, right. I was like, what's
yeah, talk
that?
About psychology.
Really? Yeah. It's like, you got to be kidding me. Well,
yeah. You're like, well, somebody better tell. And then, well, then you're scared because you don't know. Did she tell him? Did she not tell him? Now you're waiting for the other shoe to drop for like weeks. Or how about this one?
It's dinner time.
We're going to think about the punishment. Yeah. We'll let you know. How long did that go on? Right? And you're like, oh man, you're just like stressing and struggling. No idea what's going to happen.
Learning the art of no is a whole nother episode we'll get to.
Well, and to add to that, part of that episode, we should have my son on because he'll educate everybody on how to appropriately negotiate.
Past no.
And successfully, wildly succeed. He's one of the most successful children that ever lived on the face of the earth who was able to negotiate past no and make something work. I mean, I'm talking, he was doing PowerPoint presentations at like 7 on, you know, like presenting his case. Yeah. We should have him on to talk about it.
Actually, having our kids as guests at some point might be fun.
Yeah. Or disastrous.
Well, that's okay. We can tape it and never, you never know what's going to come out on the air.
That would be fun.
Let's thank everybody for joining us again. This is our longest episode so far. We'll see what happens in edits when we get to the cutting room floor. But it's been great to talk a little bit about fathers and sons, tell stories, and laugh with you. My face hurts from cramping.
Same here.
From laughing so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening in with us. We love having you here. We'd ask you to honestly please tell your friends and family to listen in. And give us a like and come on onto Facebook and other social media platforms and give us a thumbs up.
Yeah. 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 And tell us what you want to hear about because we've got a million topics. But if there's one that's just burning on your heart, you know, let us know. We've got a couple of really exciting episodes coming up and some pretty raw stuff, too. We're going to be digging into one, you know, shortly that I think is going to be amazing. We've got a guest coming on named Michael Kuzik. And Michael is a tremendous speaker and author, has an incredible ministry that we're gonna hear about. But he talks about you know, God-given desire.
Yep.
And how our brokenness maybe takes that and turns it on its head. And that'll be a great episode.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear it. In this episode, we looked at the dynamic relationship between fathers and sons. We shared some honest stories full of love, highlighting the joys and challenges that are unique to these special relationships. We focused on some significant things we believe sons need from their dads, including seeing us love their moms well, seeing us fail, and appropriate discipline. We hope this episode prompts you to recall some of the best parts of your father and son relationships Thanks so much for listening.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it and invite others to the Foxhole. You can find us wherever you download your favorite podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you know when new episodes drop, and please rate us and comment there too, as it'll help us get found by others who could benefit. Find, follow, and like us on your go-to social media networks by searching Foxhole Symphony, or visit foxholesymphony.com to make it super easy to find us. Drop us a line with feedback, questions, topic requests, who knows? Maybe you'll be a guest on a future episode. In the meantime, prepare to move, embrace discomfort, and just be you.